Good afternoon. This is Tuesday, just a couple of minutes after 5 o'clock UK time. My guest coming to me live and direct from London, I believe it is now, isn't it? Natalia Sorensky, who when I first met online was in the West Coast, and then we had lunch in Manhattan a few years ago, and now she's moved to the UK. We're both very passionate about people in business, and I'm always interested to hear what's on your mind and what you're up to, and I know there's been a few changes, so go ahead and introduce yourself, and then the floor is yours on what's happening and what's next.
Sure. Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here. I'm very excited to have this conversation. We've had many really fascinating conversations over the years, so never a dull moment. I relocated to London because I'm working at a company called Academy, which is trying to really take non-technical people out of the graduate market. So folks who have come out of university and have degrees like from the humanities and arts and such, and actually take them and train them to be the diverse technology leaders of the future. And I say leaders because that's where my role has come in, is to actually help these young people build the skills that they need to become future leaders in technology. So it's been an amazing ride already, and I'm excited to talk to you more about it today.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, there seem to be two particular angles on that. And one is, okay, what does that look like if somebody's got a humanities degree and you want them to be a tech leader? Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, why you and where are you focused? Mm-hmm. I'll get into your background a bit, I'm sure.
Yeah. I guess I can take the why me one first. I mean, I pretty much spent my whole career trying to figure out, how do you get people to become better leaders in some shape or form? You know, we all spend so much of our time at work. And I think on the one hand, people who are in a job of any kind at any level of an organization want that experience to be more fulfilling. And on the other hand, we know that leadership has the biggest outsized influence on someone's experience at work. So really trying to take some of those core principles and bring them to life for people who are, you know, 22, 23, have never had access to any kind of formal leadership training before, but have a lot of the raw grains of what we would call leadership, emotional intelligence, drive, you know, IQ. They're people who I think really deserve these skills, and women, minorities, people of color. That's certainly my role, is helping them actually build those skills in a measurable way. And that's pretty much what I spent my whole career trying to figure out, different shapes and forms.
And for you, is that focus largely been with people of that younger age bracket, is that where you are now?
That's where I am now, sort of as a choice. And it's because, you know, in developing leadership programs that have, you know, probably touched like hundreds, maybe thousands of leaders over the years, I've worked with the C-suite, I've worked with VPs, directors, first-time managers, individual contributors, kind of all up and down that organizational chart. And I think I got to a point in my career where I actually felt like I really did not want to work with people at the top of organizations anymore, especially in the tech world, because although they really need leadership development, a lot of those audiences weren't particularly receptive to it. Especially tech founders tend to be quite a tough audience to get them to really start thinking about some of these more well-rounded skills that we know they need to lead organizations, let alone teams, but don't always seem to take to. And so I was really much more passionate at this stage of my career about, how do I help young people who have none of the opportunity available that those folks might have to actually learn these skills and help them turbocharge and accelerate their careers by having almost some of those secret superpowers that when you look at a CEO and you go, wow, how's that person behaving in that way and leading that company? You know, why can't a 22-year-old learn how to do that? Especially if they already have some of those raw grains that would make them a great leader in the future.
That's really interesting. So if you take a 22, 23-year-old, so somebody newly graduated 1 to 2 years out of college or university, it doesn't strike me that the first thing in their head is going to be building their leadership skills.
Yeah, and it's often not, because a lot of folks, especially women, people from minority backgrounds, don't self-identify as a leader. And so part of the journey that they go on with Academy, that was my role to design and sort of figure out, was, how do you get them from a place where they're coming into a program, we've told them we think you have leadership potential, and then after 4 months and, you know, 600 hours of training, whilst they're also learning how to do stuff like code for the first time, They get to a place 4 months later where they actually think, oh, I do have leadership skills and I do have a future in this industry. And especially for the women, there's a huge confidence gap when they start the program. And we've actually been able to close that gap by the time they get to an end. And it's because we're really reframing the way you might think about leadership.
Yeah.
So people tend to think about it, I'm sure you come across in your work, as like leadership is, you know, standing up there and being Steve Jobs and wearing a black turtleneck and giving a big speech and inspiring and mobilizing a company. But actually, anyone can be a leader, and you don't have to be in charge to be a leader. And that's very much my philosophy, and the philosophy at Academy is there's much more powerful skills you can develop that's more about leadership as behavior and a mindset. So how are you going to be the person who takes the time to coach someone else through a problem, even if you already know the answer? How are you going to be that person who asks a powerful question in a meeting? Or are you going to be that person in a meeting who invites someone to speak up who hasn't talked the whole time? You know, those are real leadership qualities. And those are the kinds of things that actually, once people graduate our program, they realize, oh, if I do that, that makes me a leader. And leadership is not being in charge. It's actually being someone who brings out the best in others.
Leadership is not about being in charge. It's being someone who brings out the best in others. I like that. The other piece that occurs to me from my experience is leading is self-leadership.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a few minutes. We both had busy days. We had a few minutes before we got on, and I just went, well, you know, it's managing state, managing self. And
it is.
I just saw online today a mentee of mine who was commending a mentee of theirs for winning some industry award. And that mentee of mine is 26.
Mm-hmm.
I've been mentoring them for several years around their career development. And yes, old head on young shoulders. What are they in charge of? I don't know. Not an awful lot. But they've had the confidence to that word you're talking about, to step up and be a leader in the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives of their company. And but actually just to find that they've been mentoring somebody else, I'm just going, yeah, real cool, you know? So it's, and they started, and I asked, I just messaged them and said, hey, how long have you been mentoring that person? Yeah, since I was, how old were you when you started mentoring? I said 24.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that comes to mind is one of another past alumni of this show is a friend of mine called Ben Braben, who is hugely connected in the sort of tech startup fintech community in London and Europe. Is known as Rocket Man now because in the lockdown he helped his son build rockets that they'd launched in the field. But
amazing.
Ben's first career was as an officer in the Royal Marine Commando, which is extremely difficult to get into in the British Army. Aged, I'm going to guess, 22.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you lead off, you know, it may well have been in active service under fire. You lead a company of people, and that gets me to my definition of leadership beyond self-leadership, is a leader is someone others choose to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the bit about not being a boss, my favorite ever, I will say this, my favorite ever presentation I did, and I don't do much public speaking these days, but actually the, you know, not that I'm Steve Jobs of the Black Turtleneck, but doing a presentation to people, was at a national nursing conference on the topic of everyday leadership and nursing. Because name a profession who don't think they're in charge, given the hierarchies and command structures of hospitals. The doctors are the superior people who are in charge, but who are really the leaders? You know, it's largely the nurses, nurse practitioners, ward nurses, and just the seeing, and mostly women. And seeing the light bulbs go off for them and going, yeah, I am a leader. So the whole thing is, you're talking
That's
about, the huge thing for me is reframing leadership in the first instance so that people, so 22, 23 year olds can get that they are a leader. They've got those skills at the beginning. But also, what does that bring forth for people if they recognize, A, I've got the things within me that I can recognize are career development skills. To be able to bring that confidence forward for yourself and others. Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, I think so. And I love those examples, Tom, because I mean, what you're pointing out there about leadership and nursing, I never thought about that before, but it's so true. And, you know, if you want to take a step back and look at the big picture, there's a couple of really significant trends converging now, which I think start to put leadership in a completely different light than maybe people have thought about it in previous generations. So if you think about three things, one is, and these are all things that are quite relevant to academies or topical things that I'm thinking about, but first is that people are only staying in a job now for about 2 years, especially younger generations. So they expect that they'll have multiple different career opportunities during their lifetime, and they're not just going to go to one company and climb the ladder. That's like a very old model. The second thing is that there's a huge skills gap in the talent market in the UK, especially if you look at technology. Like there's just tons, many, many millions of jobs. There's just simply not enough humans to put into those jobs. And then the third is apparently the average shelf life of a skill is now 5 years, which is a third of that of the baby boomer generation. So the average life of any kind of hard technical skill you might learn is going to last less and less time, you know, as we continue to progress in the job market. And so when you look at those two, three things coming together, you can start to think, wow, what is going to last? And to me, it's these leadership skills. You know, if you can start to bag some of those when you're 22, 23, you start to understand that empathizing with people is important, that your ability to sit and listen to different perspectives in a meeting and help align people on an outcome is like perennial, no matter what those people happen to be talking about or what level of organization you're in. You know, those are the kinds of things that are going to last. So for me, it's never too early to build those skills. They'll stay with you throughout your career, which is definitely something I think they'll do.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, this is, it's just landing for me really, really well. I've got quite a number of early 20s people in very close to me, family and friends. And if you're 20, imagine you're 23 right now and you're just started out of college or a year out of college. Mm. Chances are you haven't actually met your colleagues yet.
Yeah.
And particularly if you're working in any form of job involving moving data around, such as the sort of jobs that Academy is skilling people up for. There's one young person I know who's been working for over a year for a European-based investment bank and hasn't seen their colleagues because they have a policy of not turning cameras on. Now, I'm a very visual person. I'd find that very challenging.
That's super hard.
But I remember once, not only then is it important, and of course, in a lot of spaces, there is working in teams, particularly you're looking at tech leaders. So working in teams and if you're not physically located in the same building, set of cubicles, whatever, which increasingly people aren't, they might come together occasionally once the Omicron wave clears. Hopefully that will start to happen. But the default isn't going to be going to the office 5 days a week. It's going to be working wherever you work. So how do you do that in the world of, you know, how do you sort of self-lead with like boundaries? Like if the CEO of your startup is emailing you at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night or not emailing you, they don't use email. If he's on Slack.
Yeah.
So why aren't you online? I'm going, it's 9 o'clock on a Sunday, dude. It's like, so how do you know how to stand up to a tech bro founder? And all of this stuff. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The human, I think the first factor you were talking about is leadership. I think I would nuance that a little bit from my experience is that the decision makers in companies are beginning to get that actually leading, rather than cracking the whip and being command and control and hierarchical, leading people, leadership in true terms of leadership, where actually people, you can align and engage and have them follow you, right? Mm-hmm. That is incredibly commercially valuable to companies. Right? Because you can survive for a certain period of time just cracking the whip on people and putting the out. Like, it's a difference in the very, very early stage of a startup to two or three rounds of funding down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing enough burning out companies. And what occurs to me also is like, what's it going to say on the CVs or resumes of these 22, 23, 24, 25 year olds? It's still going to say, can you do Python? And what was your first degree in? But I wonder if you people are going to have the confidence to start putting it at the top of it. established leader of, mm-hmm. tech teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. I think the other thing these folks have got going for them is if you could learn these skills, which by the way, I did not know when I was starting my career, and I wish I had, because I wouldn't have made so many egregious mistakes. If you can actually nail these skills down, then you go to different jobs for your reputation, you know, and you'll be the difference maker in a team. And we already hear it from some of our employer partners who, when they start to put language to it, they don't necessarily say, oh, this young person is a leader. But the way they talk about them, it's just obvious that they come across with leadership potential. They say things like, oh, this person takes initiative. You know, this person comes in, they're the earliest person on the floor from the whole tech team, and they're just doing their own side learning project because they're so driven to learn and grow. This person has voluntarily given feedback to someone else in the team to help them learn and grow, you know, in a really constructive way. So you can see already that these folks, they've got the skills, and that makes them the difference maker in a team. And if you can build your reputation like that, even when you're a junior developer, then I think the world's your oyster, no matter what it says in your resume, or at least that would be my hope. So you just build your reputation that way, in a way that really fuels your career.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. And I'm jumping in because I'm excited. So tell me a bit more about Academy. What's that about? You're involved in there from the leadership side and building the programs that fit in with that. You said something like 400 or 600 hours of training that they do through the program.
So
if somebody is listening who either is 22, 23 and did an arts degree or is a family member or friend of somebody in that bracket, what's it look like? You know, who are the successful candidates? What are they looking for? What does it cost them? What's the model?
That's a great question, Tom. So there's a couple things that make Academy pretty different from, you know, your typical boot camp, which was deliberate in our design, because most boot camps don't actually work. They either don't scale, or they put a lot of the onus in terms of the financial costs, et cetera, on the learner, which I think is really morally wrong. So the first part of our business we built was this huge talent machine full of amazing recruiters who actually spend their whole time going out there looking for incredible scholars, as we call them. So these are graduates with really high potential who have come out of university. Again, doesn't matter what their degree was. Actually, a third of the people who make it onto our program participated in free school meals. So a lot of these folks are coming from, you know, far less privileged backgrounds than your typical computer science grad. So we take, you know, about 3,000 applicants for every cohort, and that translates into about a 0.5% acceptance rate. So we're really looking for the best of the best here. We have a pretty substantial process that people go through, which they actually...
Is this UK-based or is it international?
UK and some parts of Europe. So it's all remote, which has allowed us to just really quite quickly say, yeah, if you're living in Greece, you can still be part of this program as long as you can hack it with the time zone. A little bit easier than it was pre-COVID. So, 0.5% acceptance rate. When they then come onto the program, we're staffed by really exceptional faculty who come from industry. So they've either come up through educational technology businesses or have actually worked in universities, or if you're like me, you've spent a lot of your careers working with a lot of big corporates, and you know broadly what employers are looking for from young talent. And they spend 500 to 600 hours with us, 16 weeks in teams, learning how to code and learning leadership skills. So that's already something I think is quite different than most boot camps, where you're just learning on your own the whole time. We're actually trying to help make it as much like a real job as possible, so that by the time people graduate, they know how to work in a real company. What we also do is we fund them. So we pay them a scholar grant every month that they're on the program to fund their training. And then broadly, we recoup that back when our employer partners come in the door and hire them. So they pay us a recruiting fee. And that is a really important part of the model, because with traditional boot camps, when you're asking people to pay, or you're doing like an income sharing agreement where you're taking, you know, 50 grand out of their future salary, people just can't afford that. So again, you're really limiting the glass ceiling there. And you can see that in the diversity of our cohorts. So they're like over 50% women, over 60% diversity backgrounds in terms of minority ethnic backgrounds. So it's amazing that we can actually outperform society on diversity whilst having an incredibly talented group of people. So the founder likes to say elite, but not elitist. And that's really the ethos that we have.
Well, words are up my street. I love the word elite. And I like the fact in Britain, it tends to be have different connotations. It's a mindset and a performance level. Yeah, it's fascinating, because when you can compare that to the morality of the cost of college education in the US, and particularly MBAs and Ivy League, is pretty broken. Like, you've got to invest half $1 million and hope, and then you've got to work in a job you may not love to repay it. And but even in the UK, we have a broken system that the average person who doesn't have the bank of mum and dad is leaving university with £50,000 in debt. In England, Scotland, they don't have to pay university fees, but they still have loans. But that's a lot of money for a young person to be carrying. But this, what this reminds me of is the healthcare system. I have the very inexpensive private healthcare for American audiences. They'll be stunned that as a 56-year-old, I pay less than $200 a month for private healthcare because I'm expected to use the National Health Service for emergencies and stuff. But I'm with a company called Vitality, and what they do is they gather millions of customers worth of data on fitness and tracking with a wearable, and they give you, they're getting such huge benefits for things like gym membership and, you know, if you Weight Watchers or smoking cessation or running shoes or whatever else, that they're doing so much that I can see as a business person, there's no way that they're funding that out of their marketing budget. They're actually committing a certain degree from an underwriting standpoint of their income in proactive health measures, which is enough for me to feel like I'm a happy customer. So it's like, if you look at recruiters, they're going, okay, well, it doesn't have to be, you know, the underpinnings of your business, but, you know, if it was my vision for the business, I'd be going, right, you've got a whole bunch of large companies that are going to have this ceaseless demand for talent, which isn't there right now. I'm going, well, what we're also going to pitch to you is that they need to be rounded. They need to be able to work in a team, and our 16-week program does this. And if you commit to take on X number of people per year, the model isn't just that we'll charge you a flat recruitment fee. We'll, you know, so it's a virtuous circle, right? Because you can get a source of ongoing funding, but also the candidate, it's like, in the UK, the top 30 universities are called Russell Group, right? It's a grouping of universities. But actually, in order to be competitive, the rung that just underneath the Russell Group, have, a lot of them have become absolutely stunning at job placements.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest university surveys, most of the top job placement universities are not in the top 30 universities. Which, so particularly if you're having to put that $50,000 out, you know, and that's over 3 years, right? When you think of the fees and the cost of living. If you know that you can get that, oh, by the way, they also have extended their 3-year degrees often into 4-year degrees where you're in an industry where you get paid and you get a year's experience, which also, as we know, like a good internship, gives you so much a better chance of getting a full-time job with that employer. So, yeah, I mean, so that's really cool. So you've got an extremely competitive placement, and this is focused on elite but not elitist.
Mm-hmm.
So 3,000 cohort, 0.5%, and as long as you can hack the time zones, you can be on it.
Yeah.
And then it's a matter of then also building the circular rapport with the employers.
Yeah.
So that they know what they're getting. They understand your program. Mm-hmm. They start talking early. And every cohort, that's a really cool business.
Yeah. I mean, my long-term ambition is that.
Let me know when you put the shares on the public market.
Thanks. I'll let myself know too. I mean, my hope would be that, you know, the academy model of leadership becomes something that companies turn around and they go, oh, I wish everyone in my tech team was an academy leader. Because if you're selecting people to have these qualities like EQ and drive and such, and they're coming into teams and they're making such a difference, then why would you not want to train some of your other rising stars to have some of those qualities? And so that's something we're exploring too, is just trying to figure out ways we can help employers not only just rapidly diversify their tech teams, but just make their tech teams overall a place where more people act like a leader. Because no doubt, if more people acted like a leader in the ways that you and I are describing, they'd just be better places to work and maybe keep more of their talent over time as well, which would be a good thing for everyone.
You remember, sorry, I totally agree. I know my mind's jumped to the next thought. My brain's going fast because I'm listening to you. A number of years ago, I think it was Peter Thiel, a tech billionaire, made waves in one of his many, some of his ideas are completely mad, but he made waves by offering a scholarship program to people to pay them $100,000 if they didn't go to college.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Now, I've got three sons, and my youngest is going through the college application process. And they're just a filter. What grades did you get at high school? It's just a filter. And increasingly, a bachelor's degree is just a filter.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the things that is not really taken off in the UK, but I hope does, is a reinstatement of the apprenticeship programs. Instead of doing a degree, you don't do a degree. You go to work, but you build an academic apprenticeship. And you don't build up debt. You get paid. You don't get paid tremendously well. You get paid. Now, I qualified as a chartered accountant. That I did a first degree, but then you got paid slave wages for 3 years. I had to pay my own way. I didn't have the world's greatest accommodation for 3 years. Let's just put it that way. But you get through and then you earn money later. But I look at either that or, you know, if I go really radical, I go, let's just get 18-year-olds into this program.
Yeah.
All right now, but you know, whether it's your business or another one, I'm going, it's like, what if you just put people through a program that was designed to get them ready for these jobs of today and tomorrow? And we start bypassing the university education piece. Because ultimately, I started to think about this years ago. My oldest son is 10 years older than my youngest. And I remember saying this when he went to university. I went, by the time your youngest brother goes to university, the only reason I wanted to go to university, which goes full circle to what you're talking about, is to learn the social skills and independence. And meeting new people, learning new things. There's nothing he's going to be taught in a bachelor's degree lecture theater that he couldn't learn from Google in 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a transformational life experience, isn't it? That people are going through.
In theory, yeah. I don't know if you've heard of a guy called Chris Guillebeau. He had a really fun summit in Portland every year before COVID called the World Domination Summit. But he wrote a book called The Art of Nonconformity. And he designed a do-it-yourself MBA, including a library ticket and all this kind of stuff. And he worked out you could do the whole thing for virtually nothing. And his first goal was he wanted to travel to every country in the world, which he did. And then when he finished that, you know what he did? He did an MBA. He went and did an actual MBA because he wanted life experience because it can be transformative. It's like, what, you know, it's interesting. We use these filters to get job applicants. What grades did you get at high school? Did you do math? Right? What kind of degree did you do? Which college did you go to? What grade did you get? But at no point do we say, are you a difference maker? And can I certify that?
Yeah.
If I was an investor in your business, I'd be going, you're going to get some kind of independently certification of your training models. And then people speak it on their LinkedIn and go, academy graduate. Academy, we make difference makers.
Yeah, totally. It's literally that. It's literally that. And I really, you know, we want to change the industry for the better. So I'm really hoping that even if people don't go through academy, hopefully having models like this in the market will attract more people into tech, and also just have people not opt themselves out just because they didn't go to the right school or they don't think they're wealthy enough to sustain that kind of education, or, you know, whatever things that have traditionally stopped some of these folks from getting into the market. Hopefully the more we have this kind of stuff, the more it will change the industry for the better.
Well, I'm all over everything. And you started out at the beginning by talking about the leadership is a skill that won't, well, the, first of all, a reframe of leadership, but it's also a skill that serves people for confidence, particularly, you know, people who aren't the most privileged, whether it be gender, background, et cetera, financially, otherwise, but just getting the confidence in there. So this is, it's really transformational. And, you know, I would hope that these kind of ideas, your one for-profit and for-purpose business, and that this can be propagated out, because this is a kind of idea that, you know, abundance is about, like, putting the idea out there. You've got your own way of doing it, but other people copy this, you know, get this into the get this into the education systems, just like there's a business called a foundation called the Hunter Foundation, which is run by one of Scotland's leading entrepreneurs. And over the last number of years, they've partnered with the Scottish government to introduce entrepreneurship into primary schools, or what Americans call grade schools.
Interesting.
Because how do we reframe entrepreneurship?
Yeah.
Not a whole other conversation, but most people go, oh, somebody who starts up a company. No, an entrepreneur is a bit like one of the things you were listening for when you read those resumes. It's like, the people who goes off and sees something they can go and self-start on, that they see that's entrepreneurship. It's also leadership, but it's entrepreneurship is seeing gaps, seeing openings, seeing opportunities, and taking them. And you can be a, you know, you can be an entrepreneur by just turning around and going, hey, I saw the NBA on TV, but there's no basketball coach in my school. And being a 10-year-old and going to the PE teacher and saying, hey, can I, can we start doing basketball?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll help coach the team or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
No, sorry. Very cool. I'm getting a bit over enthusiastic as a host. So. Very, very cool.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's trying to, looking to honor time. What I look to do is with these is create a podcast every week for, so that people can listen to a new person every week for about half an hour, give or take. And this has been a really fantastic conversation. As you said at the beginning, it's, we always have great conversations and, I'm really excited for you what you're doing. This seems to be a really good fit. I'm somebody with a computer science degree who's a chartered accountant.
That's right. You are.
And at the same time, I took the first, I'm, you know, mid 50s now, but I took the first 20 years of my career thinking it was all about numbers and systems.
Mm-hmm.
I started to get itchy realizing that how come I can't measure the companies that just feel like things work well?
Yeah.
You know, what are the intangibles of great leadership and great cultures? And we've talked a lot about culture and leadership over the years. But yeah, getting people in their 20s to know they've already got it within them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that those are the skills that will make them a difference maker and make the difference for them. Very, very cool.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll wrap up. And I always like to give my guests a few closing words. So over to you to close this out.
Well, I think we've talked a lot today about what it means to really be a leader. And I loved some of the examples you brought up there, Tom, from other industries and other ways of kind of framing the issue. And I think it sounds like both of us have a pretty strong hope that for the next generation, they really can actually build their confidence and find these skills within in a way that serves them through their whole career. So I can't think of any better way to close my Tuesday than with that shared belief. So thank you very much for having me by. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Natalia. Goodbye.
Thank you.